Hello there, Peabody here. Once again, it is time to take another revealing peek back into history.
What famous date shall I set it to today, Mr. Peabody?
All the way back to 2009 and Ruination, the early years.
You know, when you scroll through the internet today, there is this overwhelming expectation of curation.
Oh, absolutely. Everything feels so polished.
Right. It's like walking through a high-end furniture showroom. Like, every post is perfectly lit. Every caption is meticulously focus grouped.
And every podcaster sounds like they're recording in a sterile padded sound booth.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. You are constantly being sold the absolute best, you know, frictionless version of a human being.
Which creates a very specific kind of psychological exhaustion for the consumer. I mean, you're constantly comparing your messy behind the scenes reality to someone else's highlight reel.
Yeah, it really is exhausting. But then you take a step back into the digital landscape of the late 2000s, and suddenly that pristine furniture showroom is replaced by a messy lived-in basement.
A very lived-in basement.
We are looking at an audio environment that is aggressively, almost defiantly unvarnished. I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
Welcome to Ruination, the early years. Today, we are inviting you to step into a very specific time capsule.
It's a really unique one.
It is. We are traveling back to February 2009 in the Big Fatty online universe. And our mission for you today is to examine how this single, highly specific month perfectly encapsulates a truly unique blend of childhood nostalgia, hyper-transparent bodily updates, and, well, chaotic community drama.
And it is a monumental month for the show because February 2009 marks the one-year anniversary of the podcast.
The anniversarium. I love that.
Right. And just for context, the show originally debuted a year prior during the halftime of the big game, which our host cheekily refers to as the Booper Soul or the Superb Owl.
Okay, let's unpack this, because how a creator chooses to celebrate a major milestone tells you everything about their priorities.
It really does.
Like, a standard modern podcast would do a clip show, right? A slickly produced highlight reel of the best jokes or the biggest celebrity interviews from the past year.
Yeah, that's the industry standard.
But Big Fatty doesn't do that. Instead, no. He drops a massive, unapologetic dose of retro television nostalgia on his audience.
What's fascinating here is the sheer scale of that nostalgia. Like, instead of a standard celebration, he dedicates 15 straight minutes of this anniversarium episode solely to playing multiple versions of the Captain Kangaroo theme song.
Wait, 15 straight minutes?
Yes. He goes all the way back to the original 1955 instrumental track, Puffin' Billy.
Oh, wow.
And then he transitions into the 1970s vocal version, Good Morning, Captain. He even digs into the obscure iterations where different characters from the show are wishing the captain good morning.
That is some deep dedication.
It is. He goes deep into the lore, reminding his listeners about Mr. Green Jeans, whose nickname was apparently Lumpy, and bringing up the magic drawing board.
Okay, but Gail, I have to push back here. From a pure broadcasting perspective, 15 straight minutes of an old television theme song is objectively terrible audio pacing.
Well, by today's metrics, sure.
Right. If a creator did that today, their analytics would completely flatline. Modern listeners would hit the skip button in 30 seconds.
Oh, without a doubt.
So why on earth would he intentionally stall his own anniversary show to do this? Is leaning this heavily into 1950s and 70s television nostalgia a way to intentionally filter the audience?
How do you mean?
Like, he's weeding out the people looking for slick, fast-paced, modern content, and intentionally keeping only those who appreciate a slower, warmer, decidedly analog vibe.
Well, that filter effect is absolutely real, but the primary motivation goes much deeper into the psychology of the listener. You have to remember the cultural context of February 2009.
The recession, right?
Exactly. The world outside felt incredibly unstable. The global economy was in a severe recession. People were losing their homes and their jobs.
Yeah, it was a scary time.
So by anchoring his show in these very specific shared cultural memories, Big Fatty is creating an immediate, safe, emotional baseline.
Ah, so it's a digital comfort blanket. Like, when he casually discusses the iconic opening narration of The Outer Limits, you know, there's nothing wrong with your television set.
Precisely. It turns a standard digital MP3 download into a cozy communal living room. And he explicitly tells the audience his underlying motivation, and it is strikingly vulnerable.
Really? What does he say?
He reveals that Captain Kangaroo was the very first Memory Lane music segment he ever played on the show a year prior. and he hopes his listeners view him as the Captain Kangaroo of podcasting.
So he literally wants to be seen as that fat old fellow with the big pockets who just shows up every single day to bring a little tidbit of joy.
Which completely redefines the host-listener dynamic. He isn't trying to be an untouchable celebrity.
Right, he's accessible.
Yeah, he's positioning himself as a reliable, comforting fixture in your daily routine. He's telling a story from his own digital magic drawing board.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Once you establish that incredibly safe, nostalgic environment, the audience responds by becoming fiercely dedicated. He has essentially built a chosen family.
They really are.
But, you know, you can't just call an audience a family. You have to validate them. And he does this through the most absurdly specific, hyper-local contests imaginable. Like, to celebrate the anniversarium, he hosts the number one fan contest.
And the mechanism he uses for this contest completely shatters any illusion of professional broadcasting.
It's so funny.
He doesn't use a random number generator or, like, pull names from a top hat. He draws the names from what he humorously dubs his colostomy bag.
Which is a very direct, slightly grotesque nod to the fact that he is battling a severe illness at the time. We'll get into his bodily updates in a minute, but I want to look at the winners of this contest.
Yeah, they're a great cross-section.
Because they perfectly illustrate how this unvarnished approach crosses massive geographic and cultural boundaries. You aren't just reading a list of generic usernames. First place goes to a listener named Bill from St. Louis.
And Bill's prize is amazing.
It is. His grand prize is a giant black magnet featuring the host's face that explicitly declares him the number one fan.
But the genius of that prize is that it's an inside joke. Layered upon another inside joke.
Right.
Another listener had previously received one of these giant magnets and genuinely mistook it for a computer mouse pad. So the prize itself validates the lore of the community.
Then consider second place, which goes to Space Ace. And this isn't just someone casually listening on a commute.
No, not at all.
Space Ace is a self-proclaimed lurker who is tuning in from the middle of heavy torrential flooding in far north Queensland, Australia. He is literally emailing in from an active flood zone to accept his prize.
That is dedication. And third place goes to Kim Beaver, who has become this central, somewhat chaotic character in the show's ongoing mythology.
She definitely stirs things up later.
Notice how the audience isn't just waiting for Big Fatty to entertain them, though. They're actively stepping up to build the world alongside him. Like, a listener named Brian from Boston proudly takes on the mantle of the resident historian.
Oh, the trivia quiz.
Yes. To celebrate History Month, Brian records and produces a complex 10-question trivia quiz about the show's most obscure details, and he does not make it easy.
He drops a massive 40-point bonus question asking for Big Fatty's exact profile name on the dating app Manhunt. I mean, 40 points.
Brian even takes the time to compile a meticulously researched top 10 list of which other podcasters appear most frequently in the show's introductory audio clips.
And that level of listener investment is matched by physical effort from others, like Peter from Oakland, California.
Oh, the recipe guy.
Yes. He mails in a complex, multi-page New York Times recipe for a bacon explosion, but he doesn't just put a regular stamp on it.
No, he goes out of his way.
He mails this physical letter using 8 individual 1-cent stamps.
The visual of an envelope plastered in penny stamps just screams analog quirkiness and, you know, it's infecting people's professional lives, too.
Wait, really? How so?
A professional voiceover artist sends in an audio message admitting that listening to the show has actually rewritten her vocabulary.
Oh, no.
Yeah, she was doing an audition from her home studio for a fast food commercial, and she accidentally pronounced Chick-fil-A as Chick-a-fil-A.
Which is Big Fatty's proprietary, mangled pronunciation.
Right in the middle of a professional read. She had to record it 48 times just to get her brain to say the word correctly.
These aren't just passive interactions. They serve a vital psychological function for you, the listener. Big Fatty is acting as a small town mayor, recognizing the locals at the diner. He treats Peter from Oakland and Brian from Boston like they are physical neighbors.
Which transforms the listeners. When a digital creator knows your quirks this intimately and celebrates them with mundane prizes like ink pens and magnets, you stop being a consumer. You become an active co-star in the narrative.
But intimacy comes with a price, doesn't it? To maintain a connection that deep, the host has to demolish the wall of personal privacy.
Oh, absolutely. And in February 2009, Big Fatty subjects his audience to a radical, almost terrifying transparency regarding his human body.
Throughout the month, he is battling a severe, lingering cold. Now, any other host would take time off, or at the very least, edit out their coughing fits.
Standard practice, yeah.
Big Fatty leaves it all in. He openly burps and coughs directly into the microphone. He gives his audience daily, hyper-detailed updates on his chest congestion, specifically tracking his phlegm, which he consistently refers to as the green stuff.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this isn't just a lack of editing skills. It's a deliberate choice.
Really? You think so?
Definitely.
Right.
He is tracking his illness like a shared journey. He even celebrates his recovery by tracking his digestion, literally declaring to the audience that he knows he is finally feeling better because he has returned to being gassy.
Oh my goodness. And he backs that claim up with a story from his day job, which he calls the coal mine. He recounts eating a Southwest salad at his cubicle and subsequently releasing a series of silent but deadly, or SBD, farts. Yes. They were so toxic he was terrified. His female coworkers in the adjacent cubicles had passed out from the smell, and he broadcasts this anecdote to thousands of strangers.
The willingness to share something that deeply embarrassing signals a profound level of trust. And that physical transparency bleeds directly into his domestic life.
Yeah, the groceries.
He shares these hyper-mundane updates that most people wouldn't even discuss with their own spouses.
He talks about going to Publix and strategically using coupons to buy a 5-pound bag of sugar for exactly one penny.
A penny.
And snagging tortilla chips for $1.99. He documents his sick day meals with absolute reverence, describing a bowl of double noodle soup accompanied by a saltine cracker featuring a razor-thin shaving of butter.
A little piece of heaven, he calls it.
Exactly. It's the antithesis of the curated lifestyle influencer showing off a $50 avocado toast.
And then he brings us the saga of the fat cave bathrooms. His apartment complex mandates the installation of new, water-saving, elongated toilets.
And he is not happy about it.
He is genuinely distressed. Not because of the water pressure or the aesthetics, but because the new elongated bowl renders his favorite, heavily padded toilet seat completely useless.
I am still trying to wrap my head around a podcaster dedicating airtime to mourning a padded toilet seat.
It's incredible.
But the absolute peak of this bodily transparency, where the media landscape and the gastrointestinal tract beautifully intersect, is when he enthusiastically promotes a sweepstakes he saw on television. It's the CBS Cares Colonoscopy Sweepstakes.
Which sounds like a parody, but it was incredibly real.
He reads the rules on the air. The grand prize is a trip to New York City, a stay at the luxurious Loews Regency Hotel, and a completely free colonoscopy.
Because why not?
Gail, I have to ask why. Most hosts treat their bodies as separate from their content. Big Fatty treats his gastrointestinal tract as a primary supporting character. Listening to this month is like listening to a highly detailed medical diary co-written by a shock jock.
It all comes back to trust. Radical, often gross transparency is a highly effective community-building tool. By absolutely refusing to sanitize his physical existence, he is sending a powerful subconscious signal to you.
That you don't have to be perfect.
Right. He is telling you that you don't have to be perfect or clean or curated to be welcomed into this space. The messiness is the entry fee. If he's in hiding his SBD farts or his financial couponing for penny sugar, you don't have to hide your own daily struggles.
So he's built this incredibly intimate, trusting environment where everyone feels safe and validated.
Very cozy.
But human nature is funny. Once a group gets that cozy and protective of their space, what happens when an outsider suddenly breaks in? That brings us to Valentine's Day.
Which our host exclusively refers to as VD, fitting perfectly with the medical theme of the month.
Of course. For VD week, he decides to orchestrate some chaos. He invites his podcasting arch nemesis, an older Californian woman named Auntie Vera, who he affectionately calls the Sea Hag, to co-host 4 entire episodes.
It is a bold and highly abrasive programming choice that immediately alters the chemistry of the show.
And it completely backfires. They bicker incessantly. They trade insults. They talk over each other.
It's exhausting to listen to.
Auntie Vera brags about her non-existent Hollywood connections. And Big Fatty openly admits he only endures her presence because she sent him money. The audience hates it.
They despise her.
He gleefully reports on the air that his podcast subscriptions are absolutely plummeting during these 4 days. Listeners are hitting the unsubscribe button in droves because they genuinely, actively dislike the Sea Hag's presence.
And the backlash is so intense, it sparks wild conspiracy theories within the community.
Oh, this is my favorite part.
Remember Kim Beaver? The third place winner of the fan contest? She takes to the internet to theorize that Big Fatty and Annie Vera are actually the exact same person.
Wait, she thought he was doing a voice the entire time.
Yes. She points out the suspicious similarities. Like, neither of them will publicly share their phone number and neither will give out a mailing address.
That's hilarious. Yeah.
She even creates a custom logo mashing up his image with an elephant and calls it Captain Kangapoo. The community is in an absolute uproar.
Meanwhile, the rest of the podcasting universe is swirling around this drama. You have British John, another podcasting fixture, who calls into the voicemail line for no other reason than to confirm to the audience that he isn't dead.
Just out of nowhere.
He just casually dispels a rumor of his own demise and hangs up.
And amidst all this interpersonal chaos, Big Fatty decides to debut a custom 40-second iPhone ringtone of himself.
Oh, that ringtone?
It's just him loudly yelling, "It's not just ruined, it's me, Big Fatty, on the line," followed by blaring abrasive theme music.
And Brian from Boston, the resident historian, reacts by cruelly messaging the host to say he is absolutely downloading the ringtone, but he will only use it for when his proctologist calls.
A beautiful callback to the colonoscopy sweepstakes.
It really ties it all together. So what does this all mean? Gail, I don't get this. Why on earth would a creator intentionally sabotage their own download numbers, alienate their audience, and bring on a universally disliked guest for an entire week? In today's metrics-obsessed world, that is career suicide.
This raises an important question about the mechanics of a dedicated community.
Okay, lay it on me.
To understand this, you have to look at classic professional wrestling logic.
Wrestling!
Really? Yeah. To make the crowd love the hero, the babyface, even more, you have to bring in a heel, a villain they love to hate. And Annie Vera plays the heel perfectly.
Ah, so the plummeting subscriptions aren't a failure. They're a reaction to the heel.
Exactly. It's actually a badge of honor for him. It proves that the core audience is highly protective of the fat cave environment. They don't want outsiders coming in and changing the vibe.
That makes so much sense.
The manufactured drama with Annie Vera gives the listeners a common enemy to unite against. By rallying against the sea hag, the audience inadvertently defends the host, tightening their bond with him. It's an us versus them dynamic that solidifies the chosen family.
It is a masterclass in unconventional community management, and it perfectly encapsulates the entire month of February 2009.
It really does.
Think about the tools he uses. He leans on deep, comforting nostalgia by anchoring the show to Captain Kangaroo during a time of global economic anxiety. He employs radical, unapologetic physical transparency, making you intimately familiar with his elongated toilet and his chest congestion so you feel like a trusted confidant.
It works.
And he cultivates deep community in-jokes, from drawing names out of a colostomy bag to fueling a professional wrestling-style rivalry with the sea hag. He takes a sterile digital audio file and turns it into a breathing, messy, lived-in neighborhood.
It is the exact opposite of the curated, perfect digital lives we are conditioned to consume today.
Which brings us to a final thought for you to take with you today. We started by talking about that pristine, perfectly lit furniture showroom of the modern internet.
Right, the highlight reels.
In today's era of highly curated, aesthetically flawless digital influencers, we are simultaneously experiencing a massive, growing epidemic of loneliness. So is that loneliness actually a result of missing the unvarnished, gross, and beautifully mundane realities of regular human life?
That's a profound thought.
Are we starving for a digital space where it's okay to cough, to complain about an elongated toilet seat, and to find pure, unadulterated joy in simply buttering a saltine cracker?
It really makes you question if the friction we've removed from our digital lives was actually the very thing holding us together.
Thank you so much for joining us in the Fat Cave today. We invite you to come back next Saturday for another month of Ruination, the early years.
And don't forget to tune in each Sunday for Ruination Repeat, which recaps last week's current BFO episodes.
I'm King.
And I'm Gail.
Stay unvarnished, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Well, we hope you enjoyed today's trip down memory lane on Ruination, the early years. Join us again next weekend. We'll see you then.